Sunday evening checklist. Meal prep done, clothes laid out, and your fantasy NFL team picked for Paddy Power Fantasy's massive £3 million prize pot fantasy game. First place wins £1 million. And because Paddy Power fantasy games last only as long as the game week, we'll have a winner by this Monday. You could pay someone to lay out your clothes on Sundays. Only £9 to enter and last entry by 6 p.m. Sunday. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. Paddy Power fantasy rules apply. 18+ BeGambleAware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show in association with Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us as we roll into week two of the NFL season. Thursday night football already in the bag, and we'll be looking back at the Bucks Panthers with our friend Ben Isaacs at ESPN UK HQ for the first time this season, as well, of course, as getting into all the key matchups this weekend. We'll hear from Ben very, very shortly. Just time for me to give a shout out to our sponsors, Paddy Power Fantasy. Great to have them on board this season, and two big competitions for you this weekend. The £1 million top prize, £9 to enter for that one. Or if you're new to Daily Fantasy, want to get involved, there's a super free contest this Sunday. Just the 6 p.m. games, players you can pick from just those games. The top 1,500 customers who get involved win a prize, and it's £1,000 for first place. Just search Paddy Power Fantasy and get involved there. Incidentally, we've got our Daily Fantasy show dropping Saturday mornings. The OG, Ollie Giel, in the house once again, getting you set, giving you some steers for your Daily Fantasy teams. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the pod. You won't miss a trick. Monday episode, we had Jay Bell on. We had Iron Mike on Wednesday. Ben coming up, as I say, in just a bit. Four episodes a week. A lot of goodness coming your way. And if you're subscribing, don't forget, leave us a nice review as well. It is all good. Right, let's get this show on the road. And our friend, Mr. Ben Isaacs. Ben Isaacs, welcome to HQ.
Yeah, it's really flashy here. It's better than anywhere I've ever recorded with you.
Read the rest of the script. You know what? ESPN have splashed out this week. I feel humbled and honored. There are shirts all over the wall here for the benefit of our listeners at the locker room, including a Coombs jersey.
Now, I hope that they know that once you've had a shirt personalized, you cannot take that back.
Very good point.
Even if they have kept the receipt and the tags are still on, that's an investment they've made in you.
I am still living the dream and hanging on to, I'll get that call up. Like, what's the Mark Wahlberg movie where Vinnie Papale?
Invincible.
Yeah, Invincible.
Yeah.
There's going to be an open trial for the Dolphins one day, and I will go as a kicker or as a long snapper.
But the thing is, as anyone who's read my book will know, there were many inconsistencies from the truth of that situation and the film itself.
I'm glad you mentioned your book. Let's get out of the way, because you are, of course, a seasoned veteran broadcaster in this country, been on all kinds of shows we've done together in the past, a college expert, and our listeners will, of course, know you from your college spots on the show, but an author recently as well. So let's get the plug business out of the way first, Benny.
Well, I've written a book called Today in NFL History. You can find out more about it, nflhistorybook.com. It took a few years of my life. It's at least one important, interesting, funny event for every single day of the calendar year. Some days have got many, and some days just have one. It's all 366 days, even leap day, which is one I'm particularly proud of. I won't spoil that one, but leap day.
Who's it for? Give us a taster.
Well, when you,
gonna give the ghost away?
When you hear the word leap, is there a particular NFL team that you would associate, perhaps with a particular celebration?
Sneaky.
So something worked out really beautifully there. So it's all available now. It's a kind of, it's one you could just dip in on today's date or read it from all the way through, but it is a massive, massive, massive book. And it made me think, I never want to write a book again.
You want to get at least have a sabbatical from after that.
Definitely.
I particularly enjoyed the forward.
Oh, the forward was exceptionally good. It came in a little bit late, but it was all good. Thank you very much. Something's worth waiting for. Yes.
It is great to have you in the studio. And of course, Ben is going to be a key part of our coverage all season long, talking college. But today, we're all about the NFL. Let's start with Thursday night football. Last night's game wasn't exactly a classic. The Bucks getting their first win of the season on the board. The Panthers, they dropped to 0-2. NFL.com described it as a sloppy, sluggish affair, which I think summed it up perfectly. Some interesting things to pick out. First of all, let's start quite obviously with Cam Newton. How worried should Panthers fans be, not only with his arm, which clearly his shoulder is bothering him in terms of how little he's airing it out, but his immobility as well. He's now got minus 2 yards on and 2 fumbles on 5 carries through the opening 2 games. That is a major concern.
He just doesn't look himself, does he? He cannot do the things that you expect a dynamic Cam Newton to be able to do. He can't make plays with his legs like he was doing, and he's not airing it out as much as he used to. He looks a little bit broken, and the thing that perhaps bothers me more than any of it is that he's always come across as kind of very strong mentally, but everything seems to be getting to him. He was very chippy in the press conference.
Well, he's got a history of that, of course, as well. He's quite a volatile character. I mean, I enjoy watching him on and off the field. There's always something going on with Cam Newton, and he's sartorially an impressive character as well.
An inspiration to us all.
Indeed. Yet you're right. There seems to be a concern on both sides. And they're obviously connected. If you're not performing on the field, and he had the opportunity to win the game, of course. And there was some very suspect play calling there as well, which you can't necessarily load on him. Nevertheless, on the field, off the field, discordancy reigns at the moment, and they're in an 0-2 hole now, and it's difficult to get out of that.
Yeah, especially when you look at the other teams in that division. You know, Atlanta obviously got well beaten in week one, but they've got a very talented roster, at least on offense, and they've got the Saints. I don't see them making the playoffs. You know, week two is a very strange week because you're dealing with the overreactions from week one, but you've also only got a very small sample
size.
What's
your favorite overreaction from week one?
Oh, possibly that Lamar Jackson is the NFL MVP already.
Nice. Oh, yes.
And the Ravens are locked in to at least reach the AFC Championship. We shall see.
I liked the Patriots are definitely going unbeaten.
I don't see anyone scoring more than 10 points against the Patriots at any point in this season, and perhaps for the rest of this century.
Okay. For a minute, I thought you were being serious. The good news of the Panthers, they got the Cardinals up next, of course, so it's a way of getting back on track. But 0-2 is a difficult place to be because you suddenly fall to 0-3. The Browns have this problem. We'll get into their game, Monday Night Football, in a moment against the Jets. A lot easier because Sam Darnold isn't factoring for the Jets. But they've got the Browns. This is the Rams week 3. So if you're an 0-2 and you're staring down the barrel of the Rams, 0-3, statistically, it's very hard to get back to the playoffs. We've done a bonus video on this, haven't we, Benny?
Yeah, because 0-2 is a bad way to start the season. Mm. And certain teams, that is going to be a bigger disaster than for other teams.
We've deep dived into that. I would say deep dove into that, which probably would have worked and he would have nodded and accepted it. We deep dived into that. A video over on ESPN UK. We're going to push out on our social channels as well, at the NC Show. If you want to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, teams that 0-2 represents probable disaster. Hey, if everyone else is overreacting, I think we should as well.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's move on. So Thursday Night Football, a win for the Bucks. Jameis Winston finding Mike Evans in the mix again as well. So good to see Mike Evans back in the thick of it. It wasn't exactly vintage or particularly impressive from the Bucks, but they got the job done. They move to 1-1. What about the rest of the NFL?
I just wanted to say as well, a few years back, the idea of Jameis Winston versus Cam Newton would have been such an exciting offensive showdown. Mm. But I've just got to give some extra credit to the Bucks defense because I didn't expect that much out of them. They did so well. But Bruce Arians, I'm really not a fan of his current facial hair.
Why not? What's up with Bruce's facial hair?
He absolutely nailed the goatee for so many years, and now he's kind of got it's still a very well-groomed beard, but he's got a white beard. I'm not talking like a Father Christmas beard. It's a very short beard.
It's got a Silver Fox style.
I just don't feel it suits him. I think you should stick with the goatee. Bruce, I'm sure you're listening. Please make that choice.
It will be. Okay. I'm glad. That will probably be top of his agenda today, Ben. I'm sure about that. Well, the Tampa defense actually seems we're staying on that game for a little bit longer. Shout out to the Panthers D as well. I felt they got the job done, certainly the front seven, and getting to Jameis, so much so that the Thursday Night Football commentary team used the phrase swallowed up far too many times to be watching that game in the wee small hours. Right, let's move on to a bumper weekend once again. And that is the point of our Friday show. We are going to get you up to speed as best we can, ready for NFL Sunday. There's a ton of stuff to talk about. We've got to start with the Saints at the Rams game. It would be a hell of a matchup anyway, but of course there's an extra little bit of spice in the needle going.
Yeah, a little bit of history left over from the NFC Championship game where a very dodgy non-pass interference call.
The Saints were robbed is what you're trying to say.
They would have made for a better Super Bowl. I think they'd be in it if they'd been in it. They have every right to feel aggrieved, but they've got to be able to not get too caught up in it on Sunday.
Can they? Because I hear two sides of this one. Yeah, it was last season. It gets forgotten. All the build up to it. People are talking about it. There's the white noise of Jabba Jaws going on and on about it. But the players getting involved, they're not going to be thinking about that 5 minutes into the game, in the trenches, won't even be a thought. The flip side of that is it is going to inspire them, locker room material.
Yep.
They're going to drive all over the Rams and want to prove a point.
I think they're going to be incredibly motivated, but, you know, the Saints are an elite roster right now and have legitimate Super Bowl aspirations.
Well, they both do.
Exactly. So if there hadn't been that incident, I think this is still the sort of game that they would be circling on one another's schedule to be, at the very least, this is kind of jockeying for playoff positioning. I think the Saints will be able to put it out of their minds. It would be a very different game, I think, if this was at the Superdome. Mm. Because I think, you know, you've been to the Superdome. You know how crazy it gets there. Can you imagine the Rams going into that with the way that the Saints fans were just in week one? You know, how crazed they were, the number that kind of dressed up as officials and all that sort of stuff. I think that it may well help the Saints, believe it or not, I think, playing in LA, getting away from all that craziness and just being able to play their game.
So a couple of great points. Firstly, Halloween in New Orleans, presumably it'll be a 75-80%.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine?
NFL officials will be the most popular,
absolutely,
popular outfit to wear that. You're at the Superdome. And if you haven't experienced, put it on your bucket list. It is, out of all the different sporting environments I've had the pleasure of being in, amongst the wildest. Mm. And spot on there. This would be an altogether different game, despite the fact that, of course, the LA home advantage is one of the weaker in the NFL. So there'll be, I'm sure plenty of Saints fans making some noise in the mix there. Let's look at some of the key matchups and key protagonists here. Let's start with Drew Brees, who, very, very shrewd way that he managed the game against Houston. But we've got to bear in mind that a 58-yard walk-off field goal was the difference between them and Houston. We could be looking here at a very different situation where the Saints have come in off the back of a bruising loss.
Yeah, if the Saints had gone into this 0-1 and had the risk of going 0-2, which we've already established, 0-2 is worse than 1-1.
Very good point.
You know, then...
I got some potential stats on that, because that is our take. That is our hot take. Harry the producer loved our hot take there. The 0-2 is not a good place to be. A 12.6 percentage chance of making the playoffs if you go 0-2.
I don't like those odds. Texans started 0-3 last season and somehow did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Saints won't be in desperation mode. And whoever loses this game, you know, are not, the sky isn't going to be falling in. I want to know if Gurley's going to get more involved.
Mm. Well, he had 14 carries, 97 yards last week. So he looked, and this is one of the big stories going into the season, of course. How bad is the damage on Gurley? There's talk of arthritis. There's talk of clearly a lack of long-term durability. Malcolm Brown backing him up, though, as well. So they seem to be one of those teams that's veering more towards a committee. He had two touchdowns, 53 yards, Malcolm Brown. So they, the Rams, that is, seem to be shifting more that way. In terms of the Saints running game, what do you make of that life after Mark Ingram? So Kamara and Ingram being such a brilliant tag team last season. Latavius Murray getting in the mix. They've wheeled Taysom Hill in as well. That seemed to be quite an interesting tandem.
Yeah, and I think that group will be led by Alvin Kamara, obviously. And it's down to him now. When he gets going, he can really kind of impose his will. Mm. And maybe he's going to get more time to shine, you know, without the spotlight being on Ingram. If they can get, you know, again, hot take, if they can keep running the ball, it will open up the pass and Drew Brees will absolutely destroy you.
Well, the Rams are susceptible to the run, of course, as well, in particular. They did get to Deshaun Watson quite a lot last time. And that's not necessarily a difficult thing to do, particularly because the Texans' offensive line isn't really in the protection business, particularly.
No,
it's number one objective.
No, they're kind of light on that.
But that'll be an interesting battle. Can they break down a considerably better Rams offensive line, get in Jared Goff's face a little bit?
Yeah, I would say I don't think that's going to happen. Ooh. And I think Jared Goff is going to have time. Mm. I actually think the Rams are going to win this.
Well, you know what we're going to do this week? We're going to introduce, I'm glad you mentioned that, Ben. We're going to introduce a pick every Friday. Me and a special guest are going to be picking every game. We're going to roll that out on social media. You'll listen to this at home, of course. See if you can do better. And in my case, almost certainly you will. So let's pick the first game. You are going Rams?
I'm going Rams.
I am taking the Rams as well.
Ah.
All right. So we better note this down. I hope we're noting this down, Harry, the producer.
Big pick on the big show. Friday is the big show of the week. Right. That's how I feel about these podcasts. And if anyone knows ESPN's history, and particularly the show Sports Center. There was a particular Sports Center that the presenters used to say, this is the big show.
The big show.
And the ESPN bosses didn't initially like that, but then they realized how much the audience responded to it, and they were calling it the big show, and they wanted to sell it as the big show. So I think Friday's podcast is the big show. These are the big picks on the big show.
Love it. I love it. We have adopted that straight out. I like the nostalgic nod as well to good old Sports Center of yesteryear. Right. Let us move on then. We've got, as I say, a stack to get you up to speed with. Let's move to an AFC West matchup. The Chiefs heading to Oakland to take on the Raiders, of course, surprising winners week one after the combustible offseason they've had. It was inevitable, wasn't it? They were going to beat Denver, and seeing as nobody gave them a chance, and after Antonio Brown had left, what, 48 hours before that game?
I dread to think how many eliminator pools were destroyed by people saying, well, there's absolutely no chance that the Raiders are going to win, so I'm going to go with the Broncos.
It was one of yours, Ben.
No, I don't play eliminator games in case I look too stupid.
Very wise.
The Raiders look good. I mean, I don't see them, you know, posting a winning record, and we don't quite know what we've got with the Broncos. I don't expect the Raiders to trouble the Chiefs, but they showed a lot of character, and we've all, you know, having been watching Hard Knocks and watching the Antonio Brown saga, knock on wood if you're with me, we've all been making fun of the Raiders, but they've actually just got on with things. And maybe, you know, Gruden sort of playing up his personality for the benefits of the TV cameras, that he actually knows a little bit more than he kind of lets on in front of the media.
He does know his football, doesn't he? I mean, the question was, can you stay out of the game on a day-to-day basis, day-to-day coaching basis, or even personnel, kind of throw front office in the mix there, not just coaching, for as long as he did, you know, broadcasting, of course, for ESPN, I'm a company man, as Matthew Berry will attest, and still be as sharp, or at least be able to reacclimatize quickly. And it didn't look like he was last season, but I think you could be right there. I think it's quite easy, particularly with a shambolic preseason, Hard Knocks cameras in your face, it's quite easy to write off Gruden, and that very much was what the Raiders' performance against the Broncos demonstrated. That specifically, looking at key performances, so Cleveland Farrell, who a lot of sharps had said, "Oh, I don't know about Cleveland Farrell," and you cover your college, so I'm keen to know what you thought about his debut. He got in the mix, got a sack. A lot of people saying Farrell's undersized, and they have maybe made a mistake there. What's your prognosis on Cleveland Farrell as an NFL, an elite player, which he's going to have to be if he's a first round pick?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would project him as an elite player. I think you're looking at kind of long-term career starter, but perhaps we're not looking at perennial pro bowler.
Okay. All right. But would you take that for a...
Yeah, I think so. I think if you make a pick in the first round and you think, okay, this is someone
I'll get 6-7 years out of him.
Exactly. You can plug them in and they're going to be consistent and achieve at a high level, even if they're not one of the top five in their position. I think you've got to take it. The draft can be a crapshoot.
Josh Jacobs had a great game. We talked about that on the Wednesday show with Carlson, of course. Hell of a story, Josh Jacobs. Homeless, living in a car with his dad at one stage of his upbringing. Here he is now in the NFL on prime time. Couple of touchdowns. Terrific story for him. Tyrell Williams making all the Raiders fans forget about Antonio Brown. Can he keep it up, though?
Nah. No, I don't. I mean, the thing is there are particular expectations for what Antonio Brown was going to bring to that passing game. You know, an all-pro talent and an incredible weapon for David Carr. They're not going to be able to fill that gap. But at least it's not that they're replacing something that they had, because they never had it. Mm. He never really played. So I think they're going to continue to struggle in games, but they're going to be points where they're going to surprise you. I'm going to give a shout out to David Carr, because he should, against the Chiefs, become the all-time leading passer in Raiders franchise history.
Hey, Derek Carr.
Sorry, not David Carr.
His uncle. Yeah. Let's give a shout out to him anyway.
Shout out to the Cars.
Any other cut? Jimmy Carr?
Lovely family.
Let's give a shout out to Jimmy.
Derek Carr, I think he needs about 80 yards to pass Ken Stabler as the all-time leading passer. And the Raiders have had some good quarterbacks. So that's quite impressive. And perhaps also says about the way the NFL is played nowadays compared with back in the 70s in terms of how many yards.
Quite a lot about that.
I just want to say one more little thing about the Raiders, because this will be the last time an NFL game is played on a baseball dirt infield.
Wowzers.
So the Raiders currently share with the Oakland Athletics on a grass field, which has a dirt infield for baseball. And this is the last time that they'll play with that infield there, because by the time they've got another game at that stadium, baseball season will be done and that dirt infield will be gone. When I was growing up, quite a few teams were playing on those. I was trying to think of them. Candlestick Park,
yes,
Qualcomm, Busch Stadium, the home of the St. Louis Cardinals back in the 80s, Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, where the Falcons used to play before they moved to the Georgia Dome, the stadium in Milwaukee, where the Packers used to play. These all had dirt infields. And to me, it's something that really reminds me of, that's kind of like a sort of retro NFL, but players hated it. It's a nightmare. So a little bit of history this Sunday.
Love that retro NFL nod as well. And also my first wowser of the season as well. So yeah. It was everybody wins on that one. Who's our pick?
I think the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm taking the Chiefs.
Jonathan Abram, done for the season as well. He's really bad.
Yeah, really, really bad news. All right. So we're going Chiefs. We're agreeing far too much at the moment. We've both gone, with, the same pick. So let's try and mix it up. The Cardinals Ravens is, I'm pretty sure we're going to be in agreement on this one. In Baltimore.
Yes. I think that's going to be, I want to see a comfortable Ravens win. I don't think we're going to see, the craziness that we saw against Miami, not because Miami are so terrible, which is something that we can get onto, but because the Cardinals will be able to spend a lot of time seeing exactly what the Ravens did in week one, which people didn't really expect. Lamar Jackson, you'll remember a few years back during his Heisman Trophy season when we would speak on air through each week, and it was like, here's the crazy thing that Lamar Jackson's done this week.
And topping himself week in, week out.
Yeah, and I was unsure whether he was going to be able to display that in the NFL. And the game he had against the Dolphins was just like one of those games that he played in college against a team that was much worse than his Louisville team, and he could just do what he wanted. It was absolutely stunning to watch. Obviously, he didn't have to run, and they kept him in the game perhaps a bit too long, which sort of padded his stats. I'm sure fantasy owners, anyone who started Lamar Jackson, I don't know how many people would have done, but the Ravens just looked so exciting. They're going to be so much fun to watch.
They are, and I think they'll keep it rolling against the Cardinals, who showed a lot of fight, of course, to Kyler Murray in particular after a nightmare start to his NFL career. Showed a lot of moxie getting them back in to the mix, but of course sacked five times last week in that game against Detroit. Matt Patricia is getting a lot of criticism for the way that the Lions capitulated in that game, but I think in many respects the defense did step up and ball for a lot of it. I think they are going to be maybe stronger than people are suggesting, but I can't see Kyler Murray reprising that again against this Ravens D. So I'm picking Baltimore, and I'm guessing you are as well.
Definitely picking Baltimore.
All right, let's move on. 49ers, Bengals. The Bengals, one of the surprise packages, I think, of the season, despite their defeat so far in our massive sample size of one game. Despite the fact they lost to Seattle, they were a lot more impressive than I think many people had suspected, particularly with AJ Green out, John Ross stepping up, 158 yards for him, a couple of touchdowns as well. So stepping into that void, Andy Dalton, who Nicky Bandini on our radio show on Sunday was describing very much as the water margin NFL quarterbacks. A plain, dead set average kind of player.
Yeah, like Jimmy Garoppolo.
No, I disagree. That Garoppolo struggled in many respects, of course. But again, I think sometimes the stats do mislead, as we know. You know, 0-2 is bad.
Yeah, it is.
Stats can lie. Yeah. Isaacs.
Jimmy G, it was interesting because I think the 49ers played a good game. Mm. He did what he had to do. There was nothing flashy, certainly, about the stats. I'm not sure how much I fully trust the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo. They were obviously a very trendy pick. People were talking about the Super Bowl last year.
I can't believe how quickly everybody has fallen off the Jimmy G train.
I mean, we talk about small sample size. He's obviously only ever played a handful of games, and the talent is there. And when he was drafted, I was there, sat next to somebody representing his university, and they were just so excited. Oh, he's going to the Patriots. And
I thought you were going to say I was sat next to somebody representing him. Isaac's rubbing shoulders with Garoppolo's agent.
I think he was the person I was sat next to was probably the only person who really cared about Jimmy Garoppolo that day. He was not talked about. And then if the Patriots draft you, there's probably something good there.
Right.
The 49ers were good. I think I don't like this matchup for them, actually. Mm. I think they'll get Joe Mixon involved. And I can see the Bengals winning this.
Okay. This is our first point of difference because I'm taking the 49ers. Jimmy G, I believe, and Jimmy G is going to shut up the haters this weekend.
The West Coast Dalton.
So you're going Bengals. Yeah. I'm going 49ers. That game in Cincinnati. Incidentally, let's get on to Vikings-Packers next, I think, is a good place to go. In Green Bay, of course, Minnesota off the back of that win against Atlanta in week one, where they dominated proceedings, really. Atlanta, not at the races. They rallied a little bit towards the end. And, of course, the Packers beating your Chicago Bears.
Oh, boy.
Improbably, only putting up 10 points and still winning.
Yeah, if you told me that the Packers were only going to score 10 points, I think, okay, a nice, easy win for the Bears. But the Packers' defense was absolutely fantastic. Mm. We've heard a lot about the Vikings' defense. So I'm not expecting lots and lots of points in this one. I think the Vikings will pass them. Obviously, they only threw the ball, I think, 10 times against Atlanta. Dalvin Cook is just such a fantastic player. He's just below that level of, you know, Zeke and Saquon.
Once do you think he could get into, because of course he's been plagued by injuries in his brief NFL career, I should say, but do you think he has the potential to get into that tier? Because at the moment, yeah, Elliott and Saquon Barkley are in a league of their own. Or do you think he's going to be a kind of second tier, a Modric to a Messi and Ronaldo?
Yes, I think that's exactly. I don't think he's ever going to break into that too. Partly because we always call him Dalvin Cook. We don't call him Dalvin. Whereas I'll say Saquon, I'll
fair
say
point.
Zeke.
It's a fair
you
point.
Know?
Get on to the Vikings about that.
Yeah, I shall.
Vikings
I will.
Media.
I will.
I expect phone calls and emails going in right after this record, Ben.
You know, someone's going to end this game 2-0, which is better than 1-1.
Yes,
and
it is. Yes,
if,
it is.
If the Bears somehow lose against the Broncos, then arguably they're out of it. This, you know, we want to talk about week two overreactions. This could be the sort of game that decides the NFC North. Obviously Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in this game, but I think he's going to have his work cut out against the Vikings defense, much like he did against the Bears.
And we still don't know what this offense is going to really look like for the Packers. And it's the problem. And we talked about it with Tom Deacon on the show last week, the era of Mike McCarthy, which of course led Deacon to segue into what it would be like for Mick McCarthy to be a head coach in the, you know, I'm sure you enjoyed that, but the point remains that when you have a player like Aaron Rodgers, who is a generational talent, also a very dogmatic character and a quarterback, the most influential position on the field in arguably, as Carlson often suggests, the most influential position in sports.
Yeah, I would agree 100%.
Combine all of those things. And he's, you know, I don't think it's fair to say Aaron Rodgers is chippy, but he's definitely got aside to him, we understand that makes him very focused and dogmatic. I'll go back to my original description of him. So we don't quite know how that dynamic is going to work.
No, he's Aaron Rodgers, despite all his talent, is not always the most popular player among his teammates. His teammates know that he's kind of their meal ticket, that they will go as far as Aaron Rodgers will take them. So obviously they've got a lot of respect, but he isn't always very personable to those players. Unlike, just to go back to Lamar Jackson, apparently he is one of the most popular quarterbacks among teammates of anyone in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is a little bit different. We don't know how it's going to work with him in the offense, how it will work with him and a head coach. I'm not sure there is a quarterback in the NFL who wields more power within his organization than Aaron Rodgers.
You know, going off on a little tangent there, because it's really interesting. I'm always fascinated by the types of quarterback that you get in terms of character and how they deal with their teammates and how they are. And we were touching on this, I think, in relation to Hard Knocks and looking at Nate Peterman in particular, and Mike Glennon. Nate Peterman is very meek and mild and Gruden was trying to get something out of him. And you have quarterbacks that are quite clearly, Glennon as well, actually, not the most gregarious and charismatic and natural, all the way through to the Brett Favres, who are the prototype of that. You have the, I'll let my play do the talking, could just command, cool, I see, respect. All kinds of different types. What would you be as a quarterback in the NFL? Would you go in and be mouthy?
I would be incredibly mouthy. I would be, if I was kind of like going sort of star high school quarterback, everybody would just be absolutely sick of me thinking, I cannot wait for him to go to one of these big Power 5 schools and just leave us alone, because I would just not be able to stop talking. Any little thing that I'm even slightly good at, I exaggerate so much. If I was a genuine sort of sporting prodigy, you would not hear me shut up about it.
I love it. I love it. It doesn't surprise me either. Now, one thing I've noticed, and again, benefit for our listeners at home, if you want to head on over to the ESPN UK channels or at the NC Show social media, you'll find the video that we roll out. So our famous 0-2 chat, or now infamous 0-2 chat, is out there somewhere as you're listening to this, or it will be soon. So for the benefit of those who can't see us at the moment, we have ESPN glasses on the table.
Yeah,
ESPN branded glasses on our table. And it reminded you, Ben, of a story that I'd forgotten.
Yeah, it's something that I will never forget. Going back to, I think, 2004, ESPN celebrating its 25th anniversary, And you and I were in a bar in Vegas, way, way off the strip. You can, everything's kind of, you know what you're getting when you're on the strip in Vegas. Once you go out from there and you go to a bar for locals, you have no idea what to expect.
A bar called Norma Jean's.
It was called Norma Jean's.
That and, I remember.
You were performing some comedy, and there were some other people there, and it was a fun night. But it became clear after a certain point that this bar was for locals, and...
I like the way you pointed out there were some other people there.
Well, what I mean is there were other people performing. It wasn't just that you walked in and just started...
One night only.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they had these fantastic ESPN 25th anniversary beer glasses that they were serving the beer in. And I'd obviously had a couple of beers, and I desperately wanted a full set of four glasses, an E, an S, a P, and an N. And I ended up with an E and an N. It would have been great if they also did a B. And we had to smuggle these out of there. And I'm pretty convinced that you helped me steal these ESPN glasses from the
categorically
bar.
Categorically denied.
There are probably pictures of us in that bar.
No,
I mean, we can never go in there. But they're both now broken. And when the second one got broken, I looked on eBay to see if I could find them. And
break it after Mitch Trubisky's performance.
This was in the Jay Cutler years.
sure.
But it was such a wonderful glass and a wonderful memory of an adventure in Vegas that I wasn't sure we were going to survive, seeing as taxi drivers did not want to come to that bar.
Well, I will speak to some of the powers that be here, because I'm a company man, and maybe we can replace at least one of those ESPN glasses.
That would be,
I would say
it's the least you can do.
Sure. I just to be very, very clear, had nothing to do with those glasses.
You were definitely involved.
Jeans bar, categorically. So Vikings Packers, which way are you going?
I'm going to go Vikings on the road.
Wow, big call. I'm going Packers. There we go. I'm going Packers at home. Aaron gets it done.
This could be the best game of the week.
It's definitely not going to be the Patriots-Dolphins. Although, and this is in Miami, Vegas has gone crazy in terms of the line. I've seen 19. Some people think it might get up to 20. That is, of course, the Patriots at 19-point favorites for this one. Clearly, Miami are in all kinds of disarray. And the Minka Fitzpatrick news today, where they're saying Minka Fitzpatrick is... up for grabs if you want him. I can't understand that. I get the idea that a team is looking pragmatically at a rebuild over 2-4 years, and therefore a number of its key players are allowed to leave. Tunsil, I'd argue, was on the bubble anyway in terms of his age.
Sure.
But I get it. I understand that sometimes you've got a deal to stock up picks to be able to rebuild again. I don't get at all, Ben, why you would let one of your key players who is young, who is in his second season, who is absolutely representative of that rebuilding process. I don't get it.
I agree. If that's the sort of person you want to be part of the nucleus, I don't know if there's something going on that we don't know about, or just, you know, the organization feels that what they could get for him just allows them to, you know, when you think back to Jimmy Johnson, the way that he rebuilt the Cowboys with Jerry Jones, where they got rid of any good player that they had just to accumulate draft picks, using the idea that just as many draft picks as you can accumulate, you can get players in and just kind of start again. But yeah, I would keep Minka Fitzpatrick. Obviously the Dolphins have got a great record at home against the Patriots. Yep. 5-1 over the last six seasons. It's going to be 6-1. No, it's not. It's going to be 5-2. The Dolphins have no chance in this game. And the thing is with the Dolphins, and Dolphins fans are obviously going to be bitterly disappointed with the way that the season started, but this isn't a team that we expected anything from. It's not like, oh, you know, if we're going to go 0-2 and we've established 0-2 is bad, but they probably knew they were going to go 0-2.
When would you bring Josh Rosen in?
Now.
What was he like in college? Was he one of your hottest picks?
I really thought that Josh Rosen's been treated a little bit unfairly.
Right.
You know, the Cardinals were not good and the Dolphins are not good now. He's not been put in good situations, but he is a young quarterback who I think you may as well play him now. he's got more chance of being your future.
Yeah. Okay. You might well see him in this game, the way it's going to go. I think it'll be tighter than the Dolphins week one game against the Ravens.
I agree.
Pretty much every game in history will be tighter than that game. But yeah, it's got to be the Patriots on the road all the way there. So we're agreeing on that one.
Absolutely.
Let's go to interesting game between the Jags and the Texans. Interesting because, of course, the Jaguars suffering that desperately unlucky injury to Nick Foles there. Their starting quarterback, the new dawn of the new era. Foles goes out within a couple of quarters. The Gardner Minshew era begins. And of course, he is now an automatic cult hero all around America. His facial hair, I'm assuming you approve of.
Yeah, even just for the moustache, he's a cult hero.
Primarily because of the moustache, by the look of it.
When he came into that game, because like a lot of people I was watching on Red Zone, when he came into that game, I thought, I wonder how many people are now Googling Gardner Minshew. Who is this guy? Obviously on Wednesday with Mike, he kind of went through his story about how he was expecting to kind of try to be a graduate assistant to go into coaching, but ended up at Washington State where they run the air raid. He is someone who was a really good quarterback in college, but always looked like he'd reached his ceiling already. I didn't expect him to get drafted. I'd love to be able to sit here and say, well, this is what I expected. And when he was taken the sixth round, I thought this is the next Tom Brady. He's just going to wait for his opportunity and then he's going to light it up.
No one was thinking that, right? Was Mel Kiper thinking that?
No, nobody was thinking this. Obviously he's been put in a situation now where he has to play. He's been put in a situation where they've got a pretty good defense. He's been put in a situation where they've got a running back who, if he stays healthy, is someone you can rely on.
Yeah.
He's not in a bad situation. And I think he's going to win games, but he is very close to his ceiling.
It is a very good point. They're going to be, as they have been for years, really defense driven. Mm. They're going to concentrate on the running game if Fournette can stay fit. So he's not going to necessarily be asked to do as much as he would in a different situation.
Yeah.
Key matchups for me clearly are the Jaguars front seven against the Texans offensive line, which is giving up sacks for fun once again, carrying on how they left off last season. Of course, the matchup between DeAndre Hopkins and Jalen Ramsey, really, really key here because Ramsey shadows Hopkins historically and Ramsey has had the better of him. Rather, Hopkins had the better of Ramsey over the last couple of matchups. We were chatting about this with a few of the gang before we started recording, Tom and Ollie, part of our production crew. I've got a feeling that those kind of streaks, when you've got two elite players, at some point have to reverse. So I'm not saying Hopkins is going to be kept quiet to three catches for 27 yards, but if you keep Hopkins under 100 yards, certainly without a score, particularly with the pressure that's going to be on Deshaun Watson, I think Jalen Ramsey could laugh last in this one.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm a big Jalen Ramsey fan. I was very hot on him coming out of college, and I think he's someone that's going to be one of those elite players. He's certainly got the talent to take Hopkins out of the game, but Hopkins also got the talent to have a big one. I actually think the Texans are going to win this one, though.
Right.
Mainly on the quarterback. I think there will be pressure on Deshaun Watson, but he's done it much more than Gardner Minshew. With this being his first start, people will know a bit more about him. And although I think he's going to have a decent season, he may be playing the whole season, I think they're going to go 0-2.
Okay, I'm with you as well. That's not a good place, right? 0-2, I agree. I think the Jags are. I'm going Texans as well for that pick. As I said, we're going to wheel out our picks on social media. You can get involved with that. Tell us where we went wrong. Tell us with 2020 hindsight vision on Monday where we went wrong. That's probably a good thing. All right, let's get on to your Chicago Bears, Ben Isaacs. And I'm going to pose the question to you. Is your quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, the reason that the Bears won't get to the Super Bowl this season?
No, I don't think he's the reason. The reason may be that Matt Nagy doesn't give him the play calls, doesn't give him the offensive strategy that will play to his strengths and win the games. In week one, he wasn't good. He was staring down wide receivers, which made it easy for what seemed to be a very good Packers defense. But the play calling is what took the game away from the Bears.
They don't have faith in him, do they? I was chatting to Jay Bell about this, and he was saying, watch the first 15, 20 plays that were scripted. You could tell so much about what a coordinator, what a head coach thinks about his quarterback and his offense from those first 15, 20 plays of a week one game. They don't have confidence in him, do they?
I think it didn't help that Trey Burton wasn't there, who's a kind of big safety blanket. Yep. Exactly. But they went away from the run so quickly. Mm. Matt Nagy is the kind of offensive genius, you know, kind of mad professor style. And I think he outsmarted himself. I think if he was able to put more runs in the playbook, get Montgomery involved, get Tariq Cohen, who didn't have a carry, Go with Cordell Patterson on third and one, who's not the sort of player who you're going to have on a third and one.
Tariq Cohen not having a carry, automatic alarm bells there.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying to use him in the passing game, but just you've got to make the other team respect the run, obviously. Sure. And they were expecting Mitch to pass all the time because it became clear that they were going empty backfield. They were not running the ball.
Mitch, can this be put solely on Matt Nagy's shoulders, though?
I would say 80%.
Really?
Yeah, I would say 80% him, 20% Mitch at certain points was missing throws that he could have done that he, you know, that should have been complete. But with the right play calling, I think Mitch would have been okay. And you just need him to be above average.
Well, that's a fair point. Going back to the original question, at what level does he need to perform? What is competent enough with this superb defense around him to be able to stay tight in games, 21-17 affairs, get him over the line? Looking at his stats, and I know we can overreact massively to these, 26-45 completion rates, at barely 50%, yep. No touchdowns, through that pick, of course, as well. And you've got to ask on a broader level, the draft class he came out from, you're our college, resident college expert, Benny. Mahomes, Watson in that mix. He was taken ahead of them.
All through that whole kind of draft build-up, I was saying, I hope it's Deshaun Watson. Hmm. I certainly at that point put Deshaun Watson well above Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes has been absolutely lights out, an incredible player, and has been better than Deshaun Watson. But at that point, to me, I put both of those players before Trubisky. But what I liked was that the Bears front office really, really wanted Trubisky. It wasn't that Trubisky fell into them and they thought, okay, let's take him. They traded up. That was the guy they wanted. Yeah. And at least at that point, you know that they're committed. They will have seen everything there is to see. They will have spent many hours speaking to him. At the very least, that's who they wanted. But of course, Matt Nagy was not in the building at that time.
Right.
But if we're going to talk kind of...
So what's your hunch? Would Matt Nagy had been in the building? I just don't know.
If Matt Nagy, he is on my speed dial.
What's happened?
If Matt Nagy was in the building and when they drafted him, then you know that everyone is all in. Obviously, Matt Nagy's not going to say anything that contradicts the selection of Trubisky. Sure. But if Trubisky has, let's say he has a bad season and that's the reason, let's say he's considered to be the Bears' Blake Bortles. I think you draft a quarterback next year. You know, it's going to be a good draft class. You get someone in and you get moving. The Bears should have taken a quarterback project in the draft anyway. They don't have a young quarterback on the roster who's there just learning.
That's faintly ridiculous. Trubisky's only been there 5 minutes.
I know, but I think you should always have a project quarterback.
Always, okay.
As your, if you're going to have a third choice quarterback, don't have two grizzled veterans.
That's a luxury, isn't it? Well, you've got to have a solid backup.
Yeah.
But then do you have the luxury of a third one on the
project? Yeah, but what you don't do is have two veterans backing him up.
That's usually not a great shout. Well, it'd be interesting to know what you think. Listeners at home, if you're listening to the pod at the NC show, drop us a line, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. If you're watching on YouTube, comments below. Is Trubisky the weak link for an otherwise Super Bowl bound Chicago side? In terms of the game this weekend against the Broncos, who of course were really, really underwhelming against a lackluster Oakland. Mm. And it's not a knock on Oakland's performance in that game, of course, but going into the season, the ambition for Oakland is obviously relatively low. So many people picked the Broncos to win that comfortably. It was the diametric opposite, and they didn't really get any kind of pressure going on the Raiders offensive line. And certainly Carr looked virtually untouched and was very, very composed and comfortable. This time around, do you think the Broncos are going to show a little bit more of the Denver side and the Denver defense in particular that many people expected to see this season?
You'd think so, but I really thought the game against the Raiders was just the perfect start for Vic Fangio and that defense. It was a chance for them to be aggressive against a team that didn't have that many weapons, and they just couldn't do it. Mm. I think that Vic Fangio is obviously, he was a fantastic defensive coordinator, and he can still be a head coach. He doesn't perhaps have the defensive weapons that he would like just yet. And I think the Bears should win on the road.
Okay, you're picking Bears on the road. Mm. I'm as well. We should agree on that one. But we take the Bears over the Broncos in Denver.
And if the Bears lose, whatever happens, they are two games behind the division leaders. So that's bad.
0-2 is a bad place to
be,
right?
It's bad, especially when someone is going to be 2-0 at the top of that division.
Chargers-Lions. Matt Patricia taking, as I referenced earlier, a lot of criticism for the way they capitulated against Arizona. What about offensively? Matt Stafford, 3 touchdowns, pushing 400 yards, and mixing it up, and TJ Hockenson, the rookie tight end, prolific in that offense. Week one, 6 catches over 100 yards, a touchdown as well. Danny Amendola, evergreen performance from him, over 100 yards as well. So the offense was maybe better than we thought it might be. The defense, more frustrating for Lions fans than we thought.
Yeah, Hockenson is going to be clearly a key part of that offense. He had 131 yards, the most yards by a tight end rookie ever in a week one game. The Lions need something like that. I still think that Matt Stafford is a brilliant quarterback. You know, the NFC North has some really good, has had over the years some really good quarterbacks. And Matt Stafford is, I really think, underrated. People don't talk enough about Matt Stafford. And if he was somewhere other than Detroit, I think he'd get a bit more publicity and a bit more credit. I quite like that Lions offense, but the way that the defense just crumbled against Arizona was embarrassing. Mm. I think they're going to struggle against the Chargers.
Taking LA?
I'm taking the Chargers.
Me too. LA is our pick for that one. Let's rattle through the rest because time is against us, unfortunately, Benny. Bills Giants. In New York.
Yeah,
or I should say in Jersey.
It's a bit of a weird one because the Bills playing at Giant Stadium or MetLife Stadium, sorry, for 2 weeks in a row in two road games. Yeah. The Bills, it was a weird game. The Bills were just out of that game.
16 zip down.
Yeah, and obviously the Giants were just absolute garbage.
They were, Eli, and you know I'm going to milk this one as long as I can this season, suggesting that Eli hadn't fallen off the cliff, as many people thought. 30 of 44, 306 yards and a touchdown. Eli still got it.
Oh, I still think you roll with Eli for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
You know, This team is going nowhere. And I'm not sure they've got a quarterback on the roster who's going to win games. You just got to keep feeding Saquon Barkley and just hope for the best.
Didn't do that last time.
No.
And got 100 yards, but only 11 carries for Saquon. So
yeah,
started so strongly, head scratching all around that. Bills or Giants, your pick?
I'm going to go with the Bills.
Bills on the road. I'm going the Giants, for this one. And the Big Blue.
I think it's going to be a snoozer.
Is it? I don't know. I think it might be a surprising game. A surprisingly entertaining game.
Could be, but there's not a lot of talent.
Seahawks, Steelers, of course, Pittsburgh blown away by New England on Sunday Night Football. And, the Seahawks, as we, touched on earlier, narrowly edging, the Cincinnati Bengals. It was interesting looking at the Seattle's game plan, much of what we saw last season, run heavy, of course. Wilson only threw the ball 20 times, less than 200 yards. So more of the same, clearly. This is the Pete Carroll structure that he has settled on now. They are going to be old school, unashamedly old school, and go run first.
Yeah, and I like to see it. You know, there's so much kind of airing it out in the NFL. I like the idea that you've got someone who's going to be like, do you know what? We've got a good quarterback, but we're going to limit that because we're going to control the clock. We're going to run the ball down your throat. And there's not a lot you're going to be able to do about it. Now, the Steelers, here's another hot take. I think they miss Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown on that offense.
Hot take.
I know.
But who are the Steelers? I mean, really?
No, I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't think they know, right?
No.
Because Juju's not a great receiver. Is he a number one receiver?
Well, he's 79 yards away from passing Randy Moss as the youngest wide receiver to ever reach 2,500 yards.
Okay, so maybe that answers the question.
So I think you've got to build your offense around him. How many years has Ben Roethlisberger got? You know, who knows? I think that Clowney's really going to get after Ben. Mm. I'm not convinced by the Seahawks secondary, but I think this matches up very nicely for Seattle and badly for the Steelers. I'm going to go with the Seahawks on the road.
Wow. Okay. I'm on the fence about this one, but I am going to go Pittsburgh. I think they bounce back. I'm taking the Steelers at home. I think they regroup and re-up.
I've gone for a lot of road wins.
Yeah. Mind you, that worked out. Well, would have worked out well for you last week.
Sure.
So, Colts, Titans.
Titans were incredible, weren't they? They really, really impressed me. That was perhaps the most pleasant surprise of week one. I don't know if that's the real Tennessee or whether that was just an aberration that it was
I think defensively it is, and I think they're going to be, as they were last season, going to be right in the mix on that front. It was how good their offense looked, really. And Mariota, I think, was slick. I mean, again, it wasn't a groundbreaking performance, but he did what he needed to. He was accurate enough. They got the ground game going as well. The line played well. I think they are going to be better offensively than we thought, and as good defensively as we thought.
Sure.
I'm taking the Titans at home.
I'm actually going to take the Colts.
The Colts on the road.
I know. I think Jacoby Brissett, he's a good quarterback in a good situation. All credit to the Colts for getting him as well prepared as he's seemed to be. I'll just go back to the Titans. Cameron Wake. Mm. I heard him described as like the defensive Frank Gore, in that he just keeps being able to do it, not like no matter his age, just wonderful. But yeah, I'm gonna go the Colts on the road.
By my reckoning, we've got two more games to pick: Browns, Jets, and Cowboys, Redskins. So let's quickly sum those up. I'm taking Browns in New Jersey because, as I think we talked about at the very, very top, no Sam Darnold for New York. I wrote about the Browns this week on my ESPN column. I know you were about to plug that, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. But yes, your ESPN column is always fantastic.
Thank you very much.
The Jets.
I'll get you two glasses for that.
You remember Baker Mayfield, that time that he said that he woke up feeling dangerous and Sam Darnold seemingly woke up feeling contagious? I can't believe that it's just such a Jets thing. Like, oh yeah, quarterback out with mono. Like, you know, the dude's got glandular fever. Who knows? You know, who knows if other players in the locker room are gonna catch the kissing disease.
Well, going back to that whole quarterback swagger and or otherwise, I don't think that's going to really do his reputation in the locker room a huge amount of good. Unwittingly, of course, I'm not having a knock at him for it, but it's very, very unlucky timing. Yeah, of course, Baker Mayfield, I've got waking up feeling dangerous, yeah, which you do every day.
I know, I am a danger to society.
Who's your pick?
I'm going to say the Browns. I think that was a wake-up call last week rather than a sign of things to come. I still think this is a team that can have a winning record.
Eagles, Falcons. Do the Falcons bounce back after that messy performance against Minnesota?
Well,
it's in Atlanta.
Julio Jones basically did very little. I think Julio Jones is going to rebound. I'm not sure the Falcons will. I just think their defense is so bad. It's like, when will they fix the defense? The Eagles came back really nicely against Washington and just kind of using DeSean Jackson, using Alshon Jeffrey. I think the Eagles are pretty good, even though they started really slowly. I'm going to go with the Eagles on the road.
My God, Ben, what are you doing to yourself? I'm taking Atlanta at home in that one. Final one, Cowboys, Redskins, Dallas all the way for me.
It has to be. One of the most impressive performances I thought was the Dallas Cowboys. You know, Dak Prescott had a great game, but Dak Prescott is not my MVP from that game. Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, his first time calling plays. He was a fantastic quarterback for Boise State. He was drafted. He never really played in the NFL. And I used to kind of push for, oh, you know, maybe someone should give him a go. And a friend of mine said, you know what, you'll make a better coach. And I thought, oh, yeah, maybe. And I think in about 5 years, he is going to be a head coach. Mm. Really rate Kellen Moore. The way that he exploited, I mean, the Giants obviously aren't great, but his game plan was basically perfect. Everything played to Dak's strength. Yeah. And that was with barely using Zeke. I think the Cowboys were a good team. Another hot take.
I think we should end on that.
Yeah, the Cowboys are definitely going to win this game.
Okay, we're both going Cowboys on that one. I think that is everything. If we've missed a game pick, we'll add it to our social media picks. Harry, the producer, will probably slap our wrists with a very hard ruler for missing that. But you will still get to take your ESPN glass away with you.
Excellent.
It is always a pleasure seeing you, Benny. Of course, a regular part of our crew this season. A bit more college chat with you next week, I hope.
Sure, yes. But, you know, thanks for having me on the big show.
Hey, thanks for dubbing it the big show as well. Rightly so. Excellent stuff. Always great to catch up with Ben. Just a quick shout to subscribe to everything that we're doing. Tell your friends as well. If they like their NFL, bring them along for the ride. Whether you're new to the sport or an old school veteran, it is great to have you with us. We're pushing content out all season long. ESPN UK's YouTube channel has got a bunch of stuff there. You can follow us on social as well, at the NC Show. We're back Monday. Greg Brady making his season debut. Can't wait to catch up with Brady, looking back at all the key action from the weekend. So subscribe, download, review. You know the drill by now, gang. Enjoy the weekend. See you Monday.